Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
Alan Peck is the mayor of Somerset, Kentucky, and we wanted to have him on because he made a very interesting statement on Facebook. He wanted his kids to go back to school, his kids, but his kids in the city, even though the governor delayed letting our kids go back to school. And it's been a controversial decision by the governor in the state of Kentucky, and I wanted to give him an opportunity to chat about that and many other things. He's the mayor of Somerset. He is a Major League Baseball agent. Very interesting guy, and he believes in the future of Eastern Kentucky. So we had a wide-ranging conversation, not just about the governor's decision to delay school, but also how can we help Eastern Kentucky's economy, what's happening along I-75 in that part of the state, and other cool stuff as well. So enjoy this conversation with Mayor Alan Peck of Somerset, Kentucky. Enroll here. I love that city. My dad is, I think you guys had, they had to cancel the quartet convention, though, there, didn't they? Don't they have like a Southern Gospel Quartet convention there every year?
Yep, that's exactly right.
My dad goes back to that every other year. One year he goes to the Gospel Quartet convention in down in Gatlinburg, and then he goes to the Somerset one the next year. So
okay.
It's kind of a funny story. So my parents are missionaries on the American Indian Field. My mom passed away a few years ago, but my dad still serves there, and he does a Southern Gospel radio show on the tribal owned public radio station.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's like the coolest thing, and you know, they love it.
Yeah,
there,
that's awesome.
The community. So he travels back and kind of schmoozes with the artists and gets that stuff. So it's kind of cool. It's kind of neat. So, but Somerset's
yeah,
a beautiful area. I love that area. So
it is. Lake Cumberland's a tremendous attraction, and
yeah,
something that, you know, locals and tourists alike enjoy. And it's home for me. I was born and reared here, and
yeah,
so it's a lot of fun.
It's the hottest Instagram spot in Kentucky during the summer because of the lake.
Everybody in Kentucky
is doing their Instagram photos from their pontoon.
You're not lying. And yeah, sometimes they're appropriate and sometimes they're not, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, well, Alan Peck is the mayor of Somerset, Kentucky, and you've been the mayor since 2018. Is that right?
Yes, sir. That's correct. Started serving in January 19.
Why did you decide to put yourself through the ringer of politics?
Oh, I get asked that question so often. And, you know, it's interesting because of the divisive climate that we have today. But I ran because I wanted to make my community better. And I know that sounds maybe cliche, but using my experience as a small businessman, I felt like I had the ideas to enhance the quality of life for my own family and my kids, but also, you know, everyone else that lives in Somerset.
Yeah. Well, it's a city that it's growing, because you have a lot of people coming in from Appalachia, where, you know, it's the kind of the one of the nearest Somerset, Corbin, London, you know, all that area down through there along I-75 too. That whole area is becoming kind of almost a third or fourth metro area for Kentucky. I mean, it's like people are coming there for jobs and access to other places. And then you have the tourism attraction too with Cumberland, as we were talking about, and it's kind of the jumping off point to the mountains, if you will. So you've got kind of a unique and almost kind of perfect location to build something like that.
We think so. And you mentioned the little micropolitan area of London and Corbin and Somerset. When you combine our counties, there's close to 200,000 people.
Yeah.
And then you do have the proximity to 75, which runs through both of them. And we're only, you know, 20, 25 minutes away. Lake Cumberland, I love quoting this statistic, brings over 4 million people a year.
Wow.
Into the region.
Wow.
And so many of those are coming through or to my city.
Yeah.
And so the opportunities are incredible. I think that we're sort of emblematic of the opportunities that exist all across Kentucky. To be an area that people want to move to,
right,
as we're seeing the exodus from some of these larger areas, Kentucky's an incredible place, and
right,
you know, we want Somerset to be right in the mix of that.
Well, and again, you're on the doorstep of Daniel Boone National Forest. It's a beautiful area. I went hiking down in Gatlinburg a couple years ago with some buddies of mine. And we left early, early in the morning as we were going to do Klingman's Dome, right? So from Newfound Gap to Klingman's Dome. It's about an 8-mile, 16-mile round trip. And so we had to leave really early so we could get on the trail early. So I remember we were rolling through, I guess we were just south of Somerset. And you kind of get into the, you're really in the hills there. And it was one of the most gorgeous sunrises I've ever seen anywhere in the world. And I've been all over the place. I've grown up, you know, I've been in other states, lived in other states. And it was just, there was mist on the mountains and the sun was coming up. And it was just one of the most stunning and most beautiful and most peaceful things. And I was like, I could live here. this is great, you know. And, you know, everybody just really enjoyed watching that sunrise as we were headed down, you know, south. So there's a lot to offer there. And the people are fundamentally Kentuckian. And when I say that, I as a Kentuckian and with family from rural areas of Kentucky, I can tell you that I happen to believe that we're the best in the country. I mean, I love our culture, our friendliness, our openness, our you know, all of that. And so that's, it'd be a great down home place to be.
Yeah, no question. You touched on a few things that we promote and are so proud of. I use the term a mecca for outdoor recreation, and it truly is. Whether you want to do rock climbing, hiking, kayaking, true boating, fishing, it really has it all.
Yeah.
And we've missed the boat in so many ways. You mentioned Gatlinburg as well. They've done a tremendous job in marketing, and they spend a lot more money. In fact, those two areas, Gatlinburg and Pigeon Forge, historically have spent more money on marketing themselves than the entire state of Kentucky. Right. And, you know, so we're trying to change that. We've put a lot of money and emphasis in branding and promotion, and we're starting to see the fruit.
Yeah.
And then finally, you know, I love your commentary on it. It's real Kentuckians. And of course, I love going all across the state. But, you know, I'm a little partial to my hometown region. it is. I'm never going to apologize for saying yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Right.
You know, some of those the old traditions that we learned growing up here. And I'm glad you feel the same way.
Yeah. Is there, I know we're going to talk about the governor here in just a minute, but while I have you here and while we're talking about it, what do we do about Eastern Kentucky in terms of economics now that the war on coal has really done a number and really the coal market has shifted to the West just because there's a different type of coal. It burns a little cleaner that they're pulling out of Wyoming and South Dakota and Montana. And so there's real, you know, worry. I think hemp is part of the future, but what do we do about Eastern Kentucky's economics? Because you're right on the doorstep of that, and you are seeing some of that exodus that's coming where, you know, looking for where the economy is. So what do we do? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's a complex issue. The first thing I'd say is we unequivocally have to be proud of who we are.
Yeah, I agree.
And stop running from what makes us special. Eastern Kentucky is beautiful. Mm-hmm. We've got hardworking people in Eastern Kentucky. Yeah, we lost a key industry, but there's still so much that's going on that's good.
Right.
One of the things I love is the boom of young and talented artists and musicians. And, you know, with the natural landscape that we have, with the fact that people are looking to get out of metro areas and, you know, work remotely in a beautiful place.
Right.
There's nothing prettier and more affordable than East Kentucky.
Right.
And so
that's a good point.
I think that we should probably stop apologizing for what we're not. And I say this all the time, and just start being proud of who we are.
Yeah.
And I think if we embrace that twofold, and I know this is a long windy answer, but it's a generational challenge. But also that means it's a generational opportunity. But I would say if kids, young people want to leave, we don't need to demonize them for chasing opportunity.
Right.
But we also need people in that area to embrace the fact that if they want to stay there, don't tell them there's no opportunity. Tell them to forge their own path and create their own.
Yeah.
I've been blessed to talk to the Bright Leadership Program, which is all focused on leadership in Eastern Kentucky. And it's a product of the Leadership Kentucky Initiative. And I tell those young leaders in East Kentucky to be proud of your city, be proud of your county, and start to tell that story. Even though Somerset is a little different, we're in the same congressional district.
Right.
You know,
sure.
This is southeastern Kentucky here.
Right.
And I think if you tell your story in a dynamic way, then we can kind of chart our own new path.
So about a couple years ago, I was over at Cumberland Gap. And I remember standing up on the little overview there, and just, I like to think about, you know, history and all that kind of stuff. And I remember thinking, what must Daniel Boone have thought when he, you know, came through that gap? And, you know, to your point about how build your own path, I think he would have probably thought, this is it. This is the place where tough people can come and, mm-hmm. and hew out a living. And it's like, there wasn't any McDonald's. There wasn't any economy. There wasn't any industry here when he busted through that gap. There was nothing, you know, but wildness and more wildness. So, I mean, that culture is directly descendant from that willingness to go over the mountains, so to speak, as far away from civilization at the time as you could get, and cut out your own path. So you're right. I mean, you got to return to that sense of values. I mean, there's things I think I'd like to see us do to make that a little easier in the modern world, probably access to better, you know, and more dependable high-speed internet. But that's coming and getting
there.
That's
coming.
It's getting there. And when once that's up and running, then you truly could, if you wanted to, like you said, there's a massive exodus from New York and San Francisco. Not that we want people to bring those politics here, but there's good people in those places that recognize that they might need to leave to stay safe. And, you know, how inexpensive is it if you've just sold a flat in Manhattan to be able to buy a beautiful house on a lake or a pond close to Pine Mountain? You know what I mean? I mean, that's a very good investment. So.
Absolutely. You know, and I think that we can't just sit back and hope that those things happen. We're going to have to be intentional as a state and as communities to push for those folks. You know, if you want to leave Chicago, and like you said, you sell a 1,000-square-foot apartment for 700 grand and you come build a dream home here for half that.
Mm-hmm. And have something left in the bank when you're done. So.
That's right. You know, we've seen the tech companies as a result of COVID start to suggest that work from home is going to be a thing of the future for good.
Right.
Well, again, why not Kentucky? And, you know, I don't want to dive, well, I will if you want, but too far into some of the economic problems and the financial problems the state has. But the only way to get out of some of the mess we're in is to grow.
Yeah.
And it's something that I push very heavily. There's no mathematician that's going to solve the budget, it's going to solve the pension if we stay at 4.5 million people.
Right.
And, you know, we've got to broaden our tax base. And the only way to do that, again, is to sell Kentucky for the gem that it is.
Well, and I think that kind of segues us a little bit into the topic that we wanted to have you on for anyway. And that is mainly education. But there's a component of the education side of this, too, that's going to be very – let's just put it out there. The governor delaying the start of going back to school, which
right.
is going to put a vice grip on the economy because you have – a lot of parents who've already been having to figure out how they're going to deal with work and their kids for 3 or 4 months, and now they don't even get to send them back to school. So that's going to have an economic impact, a significant one, I would think.
No, it is incredibly damaging. And I've been criticized some for my statements, which that's okay. I'm proud of the statements I've made on going back to school, and I stand behind them. But some have said that, you know, schools are not childcare. And I take so much exception to that because in the truest sense of the word, teachers are caretakers of our children. It is childcare. They teach them, they educate them, they care for them. If they're emotionally not well, they help them. I mean, teachers are bedrock in our community. Mm-hmm. And I'm disappointed now, not in teachers. I'm disappointed in all of a sudden this notion that school is not as essential as we were hearing about for the last 20 or 30 years.
Right, right.
And I, and they say, well, it might not be safe. Well, as a mayor, I'm sending our police force and our EMS personnel and our firefighters, water, sewer, gas, they're going to work every day.
Right.
And they're exposed to some of the same elements. Now, they might not have 30 kids, but they're certainly going to be exposed to 30 or 40 people a day, if not more.
Right.
And I'm just disappointed that we've so quickly dismissed education and all under the premise of safety, which if that was a documented fact, I'd fully support, but I'm not convinced that it's unsafe to go to school.
Right. Well, and there's a lot of medical professionals that agree with you. I think if you can spend all day at Lowe's or Home Depot on a Saturday during COVID, You can go to school. You can vote. You know, you can do these things. Wear a mask and social distance, which everybody's done. I mean, I walked into a grocery store the other day and I was like, boy, I sure feel spacious in here. And then I realized it just moved everything farther apart so that people could social distance. I was like, oh, why didn't they do this before? Because it's a lot easier to get around in the store. You know, that innovation is what we probably should have spent the summer trying to figure out what we were going to do to rearrange things in order to make it more feasible. And it seems as though in a lot of different areas of our country, in terms of running things, it seems as though those officials that have been telling us to wear masks, don't do this, don't do that all summer, haven't spent a whole lot of time thinking about how we're actually going to get back to our lives with some basic innovations to keep ourselves safe. They've spent so much time telling us what not to do, they haven't been figuring out what to do.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think this is really where, you know, we're kind of at a precipice. If we have people making decisions who don't fully understand or have never participated in the modern economy, you know, one of the reasons that I get frustrated with moving the goalpost is not the fact that the dates change, but that planning makes a difference for employers and employees. If you think you're going back to school, right, you know, let's say August 24th, and, you know, you tell your boss, I'm going to be able to come back 5 days a week. My wife's going to be able to work, or my husband's going to be able to work.
Right.
We've got it figured out. And then that changes. Well, the trickle down of that for you and your employer is dramatic. And then when you do that times hundreds of thousands of people,
right,
you end up with the mess we were in with the unemployment fiasco.
Yeah.
And so, you know, those are, you couldn't be more right. We've got to start finding solutions. And it's one of the reasons we've spent a lot of time on reentry plans. We've submitted those. You know, I pushed hard early for chiropractors and dentists and optometrists to get back to work. And then before Memorial Day, we pushed incredibly hard for restaurants to reopen.
Right.
Because, again, it's not for me trying to help rich buddies. You know, I don't have a bunch of rich buddies. It's so people in my community can go back to work.
So you have you have a metro of about 200,000 people if you combine those three small cities.
It would take the county populations, but yes.
Right. But altogether, that's how many people you have that are going to patronize your restaurants and your businesses. Has there been any issues since you've let people go back into those places?
No, virtually none. I mean, we had a small, I'm not even going to call it a spike, but we had Cracker Barrel had to shut down for a week. And they did, and then it came back and it was fine. You know, we're at about 50 cases currently, active cases, and that's out of, you know, 65,000-70,000 folks,
right,
not to mention the other 150,000 to 200,000 a weekend that are coming in from all across the,
right,
the region to visit the lake.
I think that's interesting because when you say that, you know, Cracker Barrel had to shut down for a week, one of the things that I've been saying for really since the beginning of this, or since we, not the beginning, but, you know, once 3 or 4 weeks in, we sort of had a handle on what it was going to do, is that what you do is you reopen the economy and then you tell businesses, if you have an outbreak, you got to close down till you get it all cleaned up, right? And if you do that, instead of closing the businesses are going to want to stay open. They're going to have a vested interest in staying open. That's what they're in business to do. So they're going to self-police. And to a certain extent, the community will self-police too, because they're not going to want their favorite restaurant to shut down. You know, so if their favorite restaurant says, sit 6 feet apart, wear your mask until you get your meal, they'll do it because they don't want that to shut down. They don't want that option to go away. There's a way to do this without being authoritarian.
I love that point. And I don't talk about it a lot now as mayor, but I'm also in the sports business. I'm a certified sports agent, and I work with baseball players. And sort of the model really is what we saw with the Marlins and then the Cardinals. And I didn't love it at first, but now that I've seen it kind of play out, you know, those teams had outbreaks.
Right.
They didn't go play. They didn't travel. They took care of it. And now the whole league's playing baseball again.
Right.
And I think the positivity rate in Major League Baseball, in spite of the travel, is 0.3%.
Yeah. No.
And so you're dead on, and I think that the folks in Pulaski County and here in Somerset have kind of bought into that, and we've done our part. We've flattened the curve. Our hospital's doing well, and it's time to reopen the economy as much as possible.
So let's go back to the governor's decision on delaying schools. You did have a statement. You have a statement on your Facebook. You felt really strongly that that was a bad idea.
Yeah, and I still do. I'm not wavering in that. I think the original decision to empower our local school districts was the right one. And had we stuck to our guns in that, I'd be fully supportive. But, you know, what we did is we said there's local control, and then we issued, you know, veil threats and potential, you know, risk. And the superintendent said, well, I don't want to buck that.
Right.
Now, slowly, and I'm proud of the ones who have, we've started to see some districts say, you know what, we're going to go ahead and go back. We don't have major issues. Let's get our kids back in school. And I want to touch on something with that, too, is there's this notion that, let's say we go back and there's some cases, and inevitably there will be.
Sure.
That doesn't mean it was the wrong decision. We have to understand and embrace that this virus is not as deadly as we ever expected it to be, especially in young people.
Right, right.
And, you know, we don't shut down every time somebody has the pneumonia or the flu. And unfortunately, those analogies now get demonized because it is a little bit more deadly than those. But not so much that we need to shut the whole world down every time somebody has a case.
Right. This is the thing that I think we've lost all ability to be tethered to reality about this virus. Yes, it's dangerous for some people. But, you know, humans, we're human beings. And I think we've lived in our little cocoon, our little modern 21st century cocoon for a little too long. You know, we have an entire generation of people that have grown up not having to do much hard. And there is no danger anymore. You know what I mean? For the most part. I mean, we go about our lives and in this little cocooned cushioned bubble. I mean, our cars are pretty much like extensions of our recliner in our living room and at home. They're so comfortable now. And suddenly we're faced with this fact, oh, wait, you know, as human beings, we've always had to deal with asteroids and viruses and predators and all this kind of stuff. And we've sort of been able to put that a lot of that at bay. And now there's just this like tiny reminder that it still exists. And if you again, going back to what we were talking about with Cracker Barrel, if you put the businesses on alert and say, look, if you have a outbreak, we're going to have to shut you down for a little bit. They're going to self-police. Secondly, people, first of all, the big confusion with the government coming out and saying, don't wear a mask because they didn't have enough masks, instead of just telling us the truth. And then coming out and saying, you need to wear a mask. That has a lot. That to me is really the crux of the whole anti-mask movement, is like once the government officially tells you not to wear one and then comes back and tells you to wear one, even though it makes total sense to wear one. That's where that's coming from. So we've just made so many mistakes in this, and I'll just be honest with you, Alan. I think this is one of those things we have to go through to beat it. In order to beat this virus, we have to go through it. There's no way we flatten the curve. You're just going to lengthen the curve. You know what I mean? It's like we have to face it and then move on.
We're on the exact same page, and you know now the magic pill is a vaccine. But we understand vaccines aren't 100% effective. We don't know when we're going to have it. So is the thought that we're just going to hunker down until March or April and then hope that it is successful?
Right.
And that's where the logic just goes completely out the window. And I get really frustrated, you know, when we act in a manner of hypocrisy.
Right.
You know, we say in Kentucky we're going to follow CDC guidelines. Except when the director of the CDC says our kids need to go back to school, then we're not going to follow it.
Right.
And we're going to follow the science and the medicine, except when the American Academy of Pediatrics says you need to send your kids back to school. Well, if I've got 50 cases out of 70,000, I want to send my kids back to school. And I want whoever's listening to understand, too, this is real for me. I have an 8-year-old, a 6-year-old, and a 3-year-old. My 8 and 6-year-old go to public school. And I love the folks that teach my little girls. I loved my experience in public school. My wife is a product of Jefferson County Public Schools. So I don't live in a bubble where, you know, my kids get to go and there's only 10 people and it's super safe. And I have nothing against private schools. But this is as real for me as it is any other parent.
Yeah.
And my kids were going to school and they were looking forward to it and they were going to wear their mask. But why we continue to move the goalpost on our citizens is beyond me. And I think people are fed up, and that's why I issued the challenge, not to stand up in a negative way, but just let's have some courage and let's go back to living our lives, and let's do it responsibly, but let's do it.
Right. It blows my mind that if you had right now, if COVID didn't exist, and if right now you had 50 cases of flu in Pulaski County, you and I wouldn't even be talking because it wouldn't be in the news and no one would care. No one would care.
100% accurate.
Yeah, and no, and no out of those, you know, and I'm not trying to minimize this. I'm just saying if you had 50 cases of the flu in Pulaski County, it would be like, what? Who cares? And it happens every day. You know, it's like, and so I'm not trying to say that this isn't a little bit worse than the flu. It is a little bit worse than the flu. But there are a lot of things in the world a little bit worse than the flu. And human beings face them every day, and we defeat them. You know, again, protect the elderly, protect the indigent, protect those that are unable, you know, that have weakened immune systems, and then that's it. That's really the best. That's it. That's what we need to do. The rest of us go out and get herd immunity for everybody else. So
no, you're 100% right. And the only thing I'd add to that, when you speak to the flu, it is worse than the flu if you look at it holistically.
Right.
But for kids, it's actually less dangerous statistically.
Right. That's
than
true.
The flu.
Yeah. I guess
you know, for children 0 to 15, it's less dangerous. For kids and young adults 15 to 24, it's about the same. And so that's where I get frustrated is we send our kids to school every year with the flu, and if there's an outbreak, we stop for 2 days and we go back.
Right.
And really, they only shut down not because of safety, but because the census is too low and they lose money.
Right.
If we're going to speak frankly.
Right. Right. Wouldn't the pushback on that be, though, that while the kids aren't probably going to be harmed by this, what about the teachers? Because they're being exposed to the kids could be carriers. Wouldn't that be one of the arguments?
It is an argument, but what's the average age of teachers?
Right. It's
and it's largely 20s, 30s, 40 something. You have 50 somethings, which is great.
And
if you have elderly teachers, they should have the right to teach remotely.
Right. If you have
you know,
a vulnerable population,
you throw them to the wolves.
Yeah. Right. If you have teachers that are in that vulnerable population, you make an exception for them and you move on.
Yeah, 100%. But let's make the exception for them, not the 100,000 kids that are missing out on school every day.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with it. I'm on board with you. Yeah, interesting stuff. Did you get a response from the governor? Did he call you just a partisan hack or something? Or,
No, he hasn't said anything negative in that light. And I've tried to be, respectful in my disagreement.
Sure,
that's the
sure.
other thing that I think we can do differently in society is. We've got to learn how to have civil discourse even when we really, really disagree.
Yep.
And in this instance, he and I couldn't be further apart. But, that doesn't mean he's a bad dude. It just means he's wrong on this issue.
Right. Has he responded at all?
No, sir. Haven't heard from him.
Because I think what disturbs me probably the most about this from the very get-go, let me just say this, in the spirit of what you just said, but I've also said this from the beginning, I believe Andy Beshear wants to save lives. I believe that. I truly do. I believe he's surrounded by people that don't know what they're doing. And I believe he's making erratic decisions based on people who don't know what they're doing's recommendations. I think that's where the thing about going to churches and writing down people's license plates came from. It was knee-jerk reactions driven by panic given to him by people who do not know what they're doing. So I'll say that. But I don't think he's, you know, deliberately trying to break the state. You know, but at the same time, one of the most disturbing things, actions that he's taken is actually an action he hasn't taken. And that is that, to my understanding, and I just tweeted at Damon Thayer the other day, but I had Senator Damon Thayer on the show not too long ago. He is, to my knowledge, to this point, never reached out to the legislature to ask for help in dealing with this and how to handle it. And it seems to me that if I were governor, my first call would be to mayors like you. And state senators and state representatives, because they have their finger on the pulse of the various different areas of the state and the people in those areas and what their needs are, what their fears are, and what their potential ideas are. And he hasn't done that.
Again, we're on the exact same page. I think that when you're a mayor and largely a state rep or a state senator, you get the phone calls of the crying mom who can't go back to work and doesn't know if she's going to feed her family.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the family that both parents are working and they're unsure how to make ends meet. And they're calling you saying, I can't get my unemployment.
Right.
What am I supposed to do?
Right.
And, you know, when I say tear filled, that's not shock and awe. Those are just phone calls and they were daily.
Right.
And again, to your point, I do think the governor's trying to save lives.
Yeah.
But we've got to understand that there's a balance of saving lives and saving livelihoods. And I'm going to continue to beat that drum because I believe it.
Yeah.
That there is balance. And again, if you've never worked or run a business or been a part of the what I call the modern economy, that might not be understood. And I'm concerned that it's going to continue to be something where we languish in Frankfort without lack of understanding of how it works.
Yeah, and I think Kentucky's in a very precarious spot right now. I agree with what you said earlier about the only way through this is to grow. But in order to grow, there's a lot of inhibitors that got to be removed to businesses taking off again. And that's a heavy lift right now, given the way our current governor approaches it. You know, we're going to have to depend on the legislature to lead a little bit on that. And unfortunately, they only meet full time every other year. So we're in a tough spot right now. Yeah. We need more mayors like yourself that are willing to come together and come up with plans and be vocal about it and talk to people and get these ideas out there and hopefully, get the state moving again with or without the governor at this point.
Well, I've issued that call and we had a group of probably 40 to 50 mayors on the original plan. That submitted ideas and submitted letters and submitted their own plans from Prestonsburg to West Kentucky.
Yeah.
And I think that really the growth plan's got to start right here at home.
Yeah.
And each city, you'll hear me say a lot over the years, tell their story, but we all have unique stories and it's powerful when we explain it. And hopefully we can sell our communities and that growth can be a little bit more organic, bottom up, not top down.
No doubt. Alan Keck, mayor of Somerset. You said you managed baseball. How did you get into that?
Well, it's a long story, but the cliff notes were my college roommate was an All-American catcher at Western.
Uh-huh.
And I saw he and his family go through the process of picking an agent. And I just sort of fell in love with it. I thought, that's interesting. It checks so many boxes for me. And
I have to ask, have you ever had to say, show me the money?
I tell you what, I'd like to get to the point where it showed me the money. I've always been bivocational. My day job until I became mayor was I helped run a recycling business. My family does paper and plastics all over the country, really, but it's headquartered here in Somerset. And so that's how I paid my bills. And then I started the agency. And as a young, naive 23-year-old with a little bit of a dream and in 2014, I was blessed to get my first big leaguer, a guy named Daniel Robertson. And, we've had guys in almost every draft since. And so we're still plugging away. I love investing in young people and helping those folks chase their dream. And, I get to watch baseball along the way. It's pretty fun.
That's awesome. You had me at hello.
That's right. That's right.
Hey, come on again with us. We appreciate it.
No, I appreciate the opportunity. Have a blessed day, man.
All right, you too. Talk to you later. Alan Keck, mayor of Somerset. Pretty cool guy. And bucking the trend here and going against the governor a little bit. No, not in a mean or facetious way, but just kind of saying, hey, let us get back to work. Let us get back to school. So fascinating stuff. All right, that's it for me today. I've got lots of great episodes coming up. Let's see. We've got a guy coming on that climbed Mount Kilimanjaro and then builds wells for villages in Africa. And he's going to tell his story about his ministry and the crazy, cool adventures that he's had. And that's going to be fascinating. And then Cameron Mills is going to be coming back with us here pretty soon as well. Continue to download. Thanks so much. Gosh, we're getting thousands of downloads a week. I really appreciate it. It's humbling. And I'm super excited about it. It is a free download. So just go to Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or iHeartRadio's app and search for me, The Disruption Zone. And we'll deliver fresh new episodes to your pocket. Thanks to Cameron Mills, my co-executive producer and co-host. Thanks to Dynamics Productions in Lexington, Kentucky for their help with this program. And thanks to JP Web Design. I am Leland Conway. Follow me on Twitter. It's at Leland Show and at Leland Show and at Zone Disruption. And on Instagram, it's at Great Lelando and at The Disruption Zone. Thanks for listening to The Disruption Zone.